Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Let's begin with some politics. It's going to be a late night on Election Day in November if things stay as divided as they've been. It's too early to tell, of course, if there's any chance for 2012 to turn out like the hanging Chad madness of 2000. But there are a number of indications that the eligibility of small groups of voters in many states could change the math in a lot of close, so-called swing states. Today, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court will have the final word on Pennsylvania's voter ID law. The Keystone State is just one of a dozen that have enacted voter ID laws over the past year. Some see voter ID laws as a national civil rights issue.
We should be opening up the political process and letting all of our citizens come in and participate. People died for the right to vote. Friends of mine, colleagues of mine.
It's Congressman John Lewis, Democrat of Georgia and an icon of the civil rights movement. Wider participation is the mission, while others say the risk of voter fraud could delegitimize the upcoming election.
When you hear out there that the implementation of voter ID and photo ID requirements in various states is akin to taking us back to the Jim Crow era, I find it insulting for those who actually lived through that time, for people to make those analogies. When you hear people say that there's an intent to suppress minority votes or that this is a solution in search of a problem, I find that very disconcerting.
That's South Carolina Attorney General Alan Wilson. A federal court is expected to rule on his state's voter ID law before the election in November. So is it about fraud or is it about civil rights? Let's find out what's at stake in the Pennsylvania case. Joining us from outside the state Supreme Courthouse is Karen Langley, reporter for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Karen, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How are folks in Pennsylvania seeing this voter ID law, and what's the court likely to do, do you think?
Well, there's definitely strong feelings on either side. I think I've heard more feedback from people about this story than any other one that I've covered. In this case, the plaintiffs, the folks who are trying to stop the law from going into effect, argue that it could disenfranchise a lot of people here in Pennsylvania, and particularly some groups that they say are less likely to have the acceptable ID, like people who are poor or uneducated or elderly or members of some minority groups. And they argue that this is a burden that violates the state constitution and its protection to vote. On the other hand, there's a lot of people who argue, as the state does, that this is an appropriate way to ensure the integrity of the elections during the process of the law passing through the state legislature. The Republicans who were backing the law at some points argued that this would prevent against voter fraud. Before the hearing started in a lower court here in Pennsylvania, the state signed a stipulation saying that it did not know of any cases of in-person voter fraud, which is the kind of fraud that this would prevent here in the state.
That was going to be my question to you, Karen Langley, from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. So there's an uncertain sense of the threat of voter fraud, and there is also uncertain threat of disenfranchisement. But in the case of the disenfranchisement, where are the voters most likely to be in Pennsylvania that the critics of this law suggest wouldn't turn out? Around Philadelphia, around Pittsburgh, where regionally?
In both of those places, the opponents of the law have brought forth some experts that say that folks in urban areas like Philadelphia, like Pittsburgh, are less likely to have the appropriate ID. Sometimes because when you live in a city, you don't necessarily need to drive and wouldn't have a driver's license.
All right, so let's talk about the court itself. How does it break down? Are there partisan judges? Is it like the U.S. Supreme Court where we can see the various constituencies, the groups on one side or the other?
Well, the justices here are elected by party in elections, and while there are seven spots on the court, right now there are only six justices because one has been suspended. And so of the remaining six, three are Republicans, three are Democrats, observers say that you don't necessarily know that shows how they're going to decide in a case like this. But if there were a 3-3 tie, that would affirm the decision of the lower court here in the state, which declined to stop the law and said that it wasn't unconstitutional.
So a 3-3 tie would affirm. That is a real cliffhanger there. Karen, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Karen Langley there, reporter for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, outside the courthouse at the state Supreme Court in Pennsylvania, there in Philadelphia. Pennsylvania is only one of a dozen states, as I mentioned, with new voter ID laws enacted just in time for the 2012 election. Let's think about the law and do perhaps some of the math that might be tossed up a little bit in 2012 this November, if these laws have any kind of an impact. We're going to turn now to Nate Persily, professor of law and political science at Columbia University, author of Public Opinion and Constitutional Controversy. Mathematically speaking, are these voter groups, should they be suppressed, or if there is fraud, if these laws get enacted, will it be decisive in various states around the country? How does it play out, do you think?
Well, if every election is like the 2000 presidential election, any variation, whether it's fraud or ID suppression, would lead to a definitive result in the election. I think that in general, these types of laws are only going to have an effect at the margin. There is real concern, I think, not only that there might be a lot of people who can't vote on election day, but also that there'll be confusion at the polls, long lines, and other problems as a result of implementation of these laws.
What are the legal doctrines that govern this, both federally and at the state level? And let's take a look at the constitutional issues in Pennsylvania right now.
Well, in Pennsylvania, it's a state constitutional challenge, but the lower court really adhered to the Supreme Court's decision in Crawford versus Marion County. That was an Indiana case which said that voter ID laws are not unconstitutional. They're not necessarily unconstitutional unless you can show a really big burden. And so the Supreme Court has upheld these voter ID laws unless that you can show something special. In Pennsylvania, that's the reason they went into the state court, because they're arguing that under the state constitution, it's unconstitutional because there's a more robust right to vote in the Pennsylvania state constitution.
Is timing an issue here in that courts are have a built-in notion of suspicion about voter ID or regulatory laws that are hurried up and try to get passed in advance of a particular election versus something that's just generally passed outside of the political cycle?
Well, the timing cuts for two arguments. The first is it indicative of partisan intent? Are you trying to rig the rules of the game right as the game is being played? The second is, will the state be able actually to administer the law that it's putting into effect? I think here in Pennsylvania, the judge was sufficiently confident that the state was going to be able to administer it in a neutral way, and so that's why he upheld the law.
And in a neutral way would mean that the critics who say certain individuals would not be able to vote, that's probably not going to happen because of the way they administer it, or it's of no interest. It's not important. If people don't vote, that's their problem.
It's probably not important is, I think, the consequence of that. I mean, I think his feeling was that the figure of 750,000, which was bandied about of the number of voters who would not be able to vote as a result of the ID law, was not credible, and that most voters would be able to get ID, and that PennDOT, which is their DMV office in Pennsylvania, would be able to get most of those voters' IDs if they wanted it. And the truth is most voters can get ID. The question is sort of how burdensome will it be? How many hoops do they want to go through in order to get it?
What's the most test? Because in an election where it's really, really close, most can be a really dangerous detail.
Well, just to give you some sense of how these ID laws have worked around the country, we have some evidence from Indiana and Georgia where they've passed ID laws earlier, and it didn't have the effect of disenfranchising hundreds of thousands. What you could see was several thousand people ended up casting provisional ballots. Now, Pennsylvania, there may be reasons to think that there are more people there who don't have ID than in some of those other states, because people maybe use public transportation more. They're less likely to have driver's licenses. I also think that it's not clear that these laws are really going to be enforced. You've had some people administering these laws who have said explicitly in Pennsylvania they're not going to enforce the law. So you're going to have enforcement that will be spotty based on county as well as polling place.
And you're not going to have votes thrown out because it was determined later that they didn't show up with an ID.
only if they are provisional ballots that then are not cured later on by the provision by showing an ID. No one should be turned away from the polls, and I hope that the people who are administering the elections realize that that is a federal right under the Help America Vote Act. You can't turn away someone for failure to present an ID. The consequence of not having an ID is that then you cast a provisional ballot, and then you can show an ID sometime in the next 6 days after the election. But a lot of these people who are administering these rules for the first time don't know the federal law on this.
Is there always a challenge to the Federal Voting Rights Act in cases like this?
Well, what's happened in this in Pennsylvania is sort of interesting. The Department of Justice has asked for more information to see whether there's a discriminatory effect on African Americans and Hispanics. They have not gone the next step and actually sued the state under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. That would be a unique lawsuit. We don't get many of those. Usually these types of lawsuits are under redistricting cases, but we have seen Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which applies mostly in the South, been used with real robustness this mm-hmm. cycle against Texas and South Carolina to prevent their voter ID laws from going into effect.
And in Ohio and Florida, it's all about early voting. What are the issues there that might be federal?
These are kind of complicated, but the basic question is whether the restrictions on early voting violate the fundamental right to vote under the 14th Amendment. And so are you discriminating in Ohio in favor of military voters and against non-military voters by allowing military voters to cast votes early in the first few days before the election? In Florida, it is a Voting Rights Act issue whether by doing the restrictions on voting hours, you might actually discriminate against African Americans and Hispanics.
We're talking with the brilliant Nate Persily, professor of law and political science at Columbia University. So are we inevitably headed to a national voter ID based on the way some of these laws are being looked at? And secondly, is the Supreme Court going to modify any of this stuff by the time we get to perhaps the next election?
I think there is a coalition on the left and the right against a national ID for privacy and security reasons, people who fear government. I think every other country in the world, for the most part, has a photo ID that you have as part of your national identification card. But I don't see that on the horizon. And so, therefore, these laws are necessarily going to be biased in favor of people who drive, because a driver's license is the form of ID that most of us have, and then maybe passport comes second. On the second question, what's sort of the big consequence of this at the Supreme Court? The Supreme Court at some point of the next year will entertain a constitutional challenge to the Voting Rights Act, Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act in particular. If they strike it down, and it's possible they might, that would be the most significant decision in the realm of civil rights in a long time.
Wow.
And it would have dramatic implications. And it's not clear that Congress can come back, will have the fortitude to come back and actually pass something that is related to voting, because they can't agree on most issues, let alone something that could actually affect their reelection.
Things to watch in advance of this election and going forward. Nate Persily, professor of law and political science at Columbia University, author of Public Opinion and Constitutional Controversy. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, was the attack in Libya that killed 4 Americans, including the U.S. ambassador to Libya, premeditated? We'll talk in just a moment, but we want your takeaway. A listener called Jersey Guy from Connecticut wrote this: "This only reinforces the widely held belief that Muslims are intolerant, violent, and bloodthirsty. Moderate Muslims are guilty of remaining silent and not speaking out against terrorism. The overall impression, according to this listener, I get is that Muslims love violence and killing people." Your takeaways. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE if you want to dispute what Jersey Guy is saying. You can go to thetakeaway.org.